feet for. He fights with missiles and with spears. He's on 31 and he's only 17. He's been a soldier for a thousand years. He's a Catholic, a Hindu, an atheist, a Jain, a Buddhist, and a Baptist, and a Jew. And he knows he shouldn't kill, and he knows he always will kill you for me, my friend, and me for you. And he's fighting in Canada, he's fighting in France, he's fighting in the USA. This way, and he's fighting for democracy or fighting for the red. He says it for the peace of all. He's the one who must decide who's to live and who's to die, and he never sees the writing on the wall. But without him, how would Hitler have condemned him at Dachau? Without him, in a war, and without him, all this killing can't go on. He's the universal soldier, and he really is to blame. His orders come from far away no more. They come from him and you and me. And brothers, can't you see? This is not the way we put an end.
Welcome to the New American Dream Radio Show. Now, earlier this week, I learned some interesting things about adult education and licensing in Florida. Did you know that the test for the undeniably hands-on profession, cosmetology, no longer involves demonstrating your skill at haircutting or styling? Now, it's considered more important to know the right words about it than it is to actually be able to do the work. I have a friend who's been having some trouble getting past the cosmetology exam. It's clear from talking to her that she's very intelligent, cares about the work, knows what she's doing, and she's put in plenty of time to study for it. It's still problematic whether she'll pass because the test doesn't allow her to show her skills. It's a test of memory, of ability to echo back exactly what they tell you to say. Well, that's just wrong. This is one more symptom of the ongoing problem with education in today's America. They are not interested in helping people learn to think. In fact, it's much better for them if the vast majority of us do not know how to think for ourselves. It's even better if we don't want to. Thinking has been, well, less than popular for a long time. John D. MacDonald used to talk about the great unwashed when considering the masses, and terms still apt. But they want us to be busy little workers without a thought in our minds except the lies that they feed us year after year, day after day, minute by minute. They want us to be quiet followers. Now I'm pretty good at being what they call a team player. When I'm in a group, I like to listen to everyone's ideas and contribute a few of my own, and I'm especially good at integrating all those different concepts into something new, that's something stronger and better than any one of us could have come up with. And as far as credit, well, you know, I'd just as soon have the whole group take credit, you know, even, you know, whether I was a principal, you know, had the main idea or not. I'm not really in it for the glory. I'm just in it to get things done, get it accomplished. I don't even mind when the boss takes all the credit. Well, usually. You know, when I used to work for other people in big companies, I often found the best way to get the boss to accept your idea, well, you feed him a little bit of it at a time, and a little while later, he has that idea because you fed it to him. And then it's his idea, and he likes it, and everything works great. When you make the boss look good, you're doing something good for everybody, most of the time, anyway. But I digress. What I wanted to get at was this. I'm a great team player, but, well, I'm sometimes a pretty lousy follower. I'm taught to do something in a particular way because that's how it's always been done. I'm quite likely to find my own better way and quietly change. Now, for instance, I don't like to follow recipes. I like to make it. Well, anyway, usually it works out fine, better for all concerned. But that's not the kind of worker that they want you to be. They want workers who don't care about doing it better, who don't care about being better, who, well, basically don't care about much of anything. Those are the workers they can control, the ones who don't care, the ones who are afraid. We must not be those workers. We must be ourselves. We must care, and we must not be afraid. I'm Chuck Gregory, and you're listening to the New American Dream Radio Show. I'm going to play a short passage from Bill Hicks.
It's just a ride, and we can change it anytime we want. It's only a choice. No effort, no work, no job, no savings of money. A choice right now between fear and love. The eyes of fear want you to put finger locks on your door, buy guns, close yourself off. The eyes of love instead see all of us as one. Here's what we can do to change the world right now to a better ride. Take all that money we spend on weapons and defense each year and instead spend it feeding, clothing, and educating the poor of the world, which it would many times over, not one human being excluded, and we can explore space together, both inner and outer, forever in peace.
And now, coming to you live from Fort Lauderdale, Florida, in Duluth, Minnesota, Dreaming the New American Dream, with your hosts, Chuck Gregory and Mike Pelichek.
And now I'm proud to introduce my friend and co-host, Mike Pelichek, an American writer.
Hello, Chuck. Tonight we're going to welcome special guests David Marshak. He'll be speaking to us from Bellingham, Washington, and Chris Jackson will be talking to us from Chicago. So tonight we are in Fort Lauderdale, Duluth, Bellingham, Chicago, and you from wherever you are. Okay, got this in the email, press release. Put the drones on trial. Join Ramsey Clark, Kathy Kelly, Ann Wright, and Bill Quigley. Come to Missouri to join experts in constitutional and international law, supporting activists in the first anti-drone trial heard in federal court. This will be on September 10th. Former Attorney General of the United States, Ramsey Clark, will be called as an expert witness in defense of two anti-drone activists on trial in U.S. District Federal Court in Jefferson City, Missouri. And Bill Quigley, Associate Director of the Center for Constitutional Rights and Law Professor at Loyola University, New Orleans. Also there will be Kathy Kelly, Coordinator of Voices for Creative Nonviolence, will be called to witness to the effects of drone warfare on civilian victims she has met while visiting Afghanistan and Pakistan. The defendants, Ron Faust of Kansas City and Brian Terrell, T-E-R-R-E-L-L, of Molloy, Iowa, participated in the April 15th protest at Missouri's Whiteman Air Force Base, from where killer drones engage in combat in Afghanistan by remote control. The two were arrested. They were arrested for trespass as they attempted to deliver an indictment to Brigadier General Scott A. Vanderham, the base's commander. The indictment charges the chain of command from President Obama to General Vanderham to the drone crews of white men with the following crimes: extrajudicial killings, violation of due process, wars of aggression, violation of national sovereignty, and the killing of innocent civilians, and demands that these crimes immediately cease. Arrested with Faustin Terrell was Mark Kenny of Omaha, who is now serving a four-month federal prison sentence in Duluth after pleading guilty to charges at a June 6th arraignment. The defendants intend to prove in court that their protest was protected by the First Amendment of the United States Constitution and also was a response to more egregious crimes committed on the base. Drones inherently violate the laws of U.S. and violate the laws of the United States and international law, says Clark. They are associated with the concept of assassination and murder. In terms of the crimes that the accused are charged with, Clark says the defendants are being denied their constitutional rights of free speech and the freedom to assemble, and their crimes, he says, pale in comparison to what the defendants are trying to stop. The protest at Whiteman is one of many in response to the U.S. government's increasing use of drones in recent years, but the trial in Jefferson City is the first time that charges have not been filed not in local courts, but in U.S. District Court. Terrell, a defendant in previous drone trials, that of the Creech 14 in Nevada in 2010 and the Hancock 18 in New York in 2011, is a Catholic worker and a coordinator of Voices for Creative Nonviolence and will be representing himself with the assistance of Kansas City Attorney Henry Stover. Faust, a retired Disciples of Christ minister, will be represented by Columbia, Missouri attorney Ruth O'Neill. On the evening before the trial, Sunday, September 9th at 6:30, the defendants, attorneys, and witnesses will hold a public meeting at Community Christian Church, 4601 Main Street in Kansas City, Missouri. On Monday at noon, there will be a press conference from rally at the U.S. District Courthouse, 80 Lafayette Street in Jefferson City, followed by the trial at 1:30. Okay, then. The signs of revolution. The revolution will not be televised, we've been told. Is this the revolution? From where will it come, if it comes? The recent plowshares action in Tennessee, the drone trial in Missouri. Maybe a great letter to the editor. A recent article says that violence has risen in Chicago due to increased poverty. Maybe that is where the revolution will begin. Maybe it has already begun. 100,000 marched down the street in Washington, D.C. Some old guy refuses to stand for the national anthem at a Red Sox-Yankee game. A lone man goes to the mountains of Idaho. Maybe it will come from folks like those who heckled Paul Ryan in Des Moines and those other folks who stand up in public meetings, speeches, and yell out the truth about Condoleezza Rice, Karl Rove, Dick Cheney, Barack Obama, or throw shoes at George Bush. Maybe it could come from a third-party candidate. What if Jill Stein of the Green Party won the presidency? Wow. Or what if they let Dennis Kucinich or Ron Paul or Bobby Kennedy actually become the president? Wow. We thought we got wow with Barack Obama. His first job out of college was with the CIA. Do you ever leave the CIA? My guess is that the revolution, capital T, capital R, comes from poverty and necessity and maybe some reading, learning, but where would the learning come from? Corporate TV? School? Probably the internet. Some spark, some fire that just happens that was not quite planned but just seemed to work just right. Or probably it never happens. Well, not until it would get very bad and very evident, but those who do these things, these government and corporations, are very careful about that. Careful to stay just inside the tree line where we only think we see the shadows moving. A lot of us are advocating investigation into U.S. history, and that's what I think is most important. What if the big newspapers printed the good work of Jim Fetzer about 9/11, about the JFK murder? What if William Pepper, the attorney for Sirhan Sirhan, the attorney who gave us the truth about the King murder, had a column in 100 major newspapers? That would be important. What if Kevin Barrett had the nightly news instead of Brian Williams? It would change the world. In 1 week, the world would be unrecognizable from the crap we have now. information is important. Education is important. What if the history books in high schools and colleges gave the truth about the assassinations of the 60s? In 10 years, we would have an entirely different populace and nation. For the better, I believe. Some have actually found things out, gotten us close to actually getting somewhere. Jim Fetzer, Google his name and read his work. James Douglas, the author of JFK and the Unspeakable, Why He Died and Why It Matters. William Pepper with MLK and RFK. Mark Lane, he's been in this for a long time. Read his book, Rush to Judgment. There's hundreds of others. Jack White. Others who have researched the Zapruder film, photos in Dealey Plaza, Lyndon Johnson, George Bush. The hundreds, thousands of detailed aspects of all these assassinations. The work has been done by volunteers, but it has not largely not been disseminated by the media. I went into journalism thinking that it was important, and I also thinking it was kind of a cop-out from active resistance, civil disobedience, going to jail. But now I realize even more how important it is. Knowledge, education, ideas, consciousness, they do matter. They determine our actions, right? We think something, we move that way. We think Hardee's is over there, we turn right. The CIA knows that very well, and that's why they and the rich men and women who we really don't know control the media. They control perceptions. They're very clever. They've done excellent work, heavy lifting, and for that they have earned their reward, the control of the United States and most of the world. So, from all that, I determined that this radio show matters. We don't do primary research. We really only read and try to be aware of the work of others, and then we pass that along. But I think that's a big deal. So for today, for now, we pass along the name Jim Fetzer, James Douglas, William Pepper, Mark Lane. And remember, the moon and UFOs and Bigfoot, they're not just for wackos eating ho-hos anymore. Look up the name Bart Sibrel, S-I-B-R-E-L, and also look up Richard Dolan about UFOs. And there's a new book by Richard Belzer. Look up, see his interview on Black Op Radio. His new book is called Dead Wrong. And to hell with CBS or NBC or ABC News or National Public Radio or some of those popular phony liberal websites. And that may sound like paranoid conspiracy theorism, and you're supposed to laugh at that, but I say it's just paying attention. And remember what Mrs. Hinderbottom told us. How are you going to learn if you're not going to pay attention, people? There is actually a they out there, and there actually is a you and a me and a we. They, Bush, Obama, Clinton, and company, want us to be afraid, as they told us in the anthrax letters in 2001. We can do this, but we cannot be afraid.
And now, it's time for our daily civics lesson. Today's topic, constitutional checks and balances. There are three branches in the United States government as established by the Constitution. First, the legislative branch makes the law. Second, the executive branch executes the law. Last, the judicial branch interprets the law. Each branch has an effect on the other. Well, and you got your impeachment power, your power to declare war, your power to initiate constitutional amendments. Then you got your veto power, revenue bills, overrides, and appointments. Check this, check that. Yeah, right. Hey, psst. Come here, come on over. It's my last day anyway. Tomorrow I'm going to swim to Canada if I can find a river. Listen, this is the way it is. This is the world. This is reality. Get over it. Get around it. Oh, get used to it. President wants to bomb some country, kill some people. He does it. Military, the police, anyone in government wants to put some people in jail. Well, yeah, they do it. CIA, the FBI, or the Pentagon wants to do something, but they don't think you'll like it. Well, they tell the newspapers, TV news, and radio to lie to you, and then they do it. You work your nine jobs to pay for all this. You don't like it. You want to do something about it, but you're afraid if you do something about it, something bad will happen to you or your kids, or you'll lose your nine jobs, and then where would you be? You do it anyway, wondering when will the guys in black come visit you and cut off your electricity, your arms and your legs. You wonder where, are they even going to cut off my, well, you know. Anyway, they cut off people's, well, you know. You're watching them wondering, they're standing around watching you wonder and worry, and then you realize these guys are very, very good. They already did it.
Somewhere between September 11th and today, the enemy morphed from a handful of terrorists to the American population at large. Once upon a time in the woods on an island down a rabbit hole, there were 19 very, very bad men. They were called terrorists, and they had box cutters. They are very bad. They cut boxes, and they defeat air forces and put holes in buildings and bring down buildings. If you ever see a box cutter, stop, drop, and roll. Anyhow, there were these guys and these box cutters, and they were the enemy. If you were for box cutters, you were against us. But now we are all the bad men. Somehow we all became 19 men with box cutters who cannot be trusted in airports or to talk on the phone without another adult listening. Somehow we are all the enemy now. Good night. Do not get up to go to the bathroom or get a drink, or we will take you very far away for a very long time. And we can do that, and no one will ever know or care. Sweet dreams now. Go to sleep.
That was 360 number I saw on the studio a couple of times, but we're ready for you now.
Chuck?
Mike, we don't seem to have David on the phone. I was just trying to call him on my cell.
Okay. I'll just keep going here then.
Okay.
Don't stop thinking about tomorrow. Remember the night of the Clinton inaugural balls? The singing, the dancing, the persistently endless smiling, the dreams, the hopes? Remember how they gave up on health care? Remember the omnibus crime bill, the construction of dozens of new prisons? Remember the bombing of Yugoslavia for 70 days? Remember the Welfare Reform Act, the end of ADC, NAFTA, the end of jobs in America? Does anyone remember the pardon of Leonard Peltier? Drug running by the CIA in Mena, Arkansas. Gary Webb reports about that in the Mercury News, and later he's murdered. The sanctions on Iraq that killed 1 million people. The reversal of Glass-Steagall, which is all about the 99% and the 1% in today's headlines. I won't ask, and please don't tell me, if you voted for William Jefferson Clinton. Hope, change, elect Barack Obama. Remember the Democratic Party, John F. Kennedy, Robert F. Kennedy? We thought everything was possible, probable, and then they blew it all away. Clinton and Obama got the message, wouldn't you say? Yesterday, all my troubles seemed so far away. Now it looks as though they're here to stay. Well, I believe in yesterday. This next portion of our program is being sponsored by President Barack Obama's Even More Change Reelection Committee. You want universal health care? We got it. You want an end to war? We got it. You want to be able to say where your tax money goes rather than being forced to pay for things you don't want? We got your taxes right here. You want Guantanamo closed? We got it. You want the Bush administration prosecuted for carrying out 9/11 and starting two wars for no reason at all? We got that too. We've got even more change, more hope, more good things coming to you in the next 4 years. Even more change, even more hope. Barack Obama, the audacity. Chuck, do we have David on the phone now?
Oh, I'm hoping we do. We have someone here. David, is that you?
Actually, this is Chris.
Chris, well, since our first guest seems to be among the missing, why don't we skip ahead to talk to you? Chris Jackson is a science fiction writer who's enjoyed quite a bit of success, and we're very pleased to welcome him to the show. Chris, I'd like you to tell us a little bit about yourself and the Scimitar series, and well, we'll go on from there. Start there.
Sure. Yeah, okay. Well, Chris Jackson. Been writing a lot more fantasy than science fiction of late. I started writing some many, many years ago, that I don't want to date myself too much, but quite a while ago, and started out with self-publication, and I got several titles published under my own little moniker, which is called Jack's Books, and enjoyed some pretty good success, worked very, very hard to get that success, and through some connections and doing conventions and meeting a lot of people, I got a contract to write a series of books with a small press that was Dragon Moon Press, and they're based in Canada. And wrote the first book with them, and it was called Scimitar Moon, and that was released in 2009. And we, after that, we planned to continue the series, and we were very pleased to receive the Forward Magazine reviews. They do a literature reviews in many different genres. They do a contest every year, and we took the gold medal for fantasy in 2009. And so my publisher was all, I was pleased as punch, and my publisher was very excited, and so that kind of gave us carte blanche to continue the series. And so we followed that up now with three additional books, and the series has just finished up with the last in the series, the fourth book. And we were also very, very fortunate, and I owe a lot to my editor, Gabrielle Harbouy, too, to receive the 2010 Forward Gold Medal for Scimitar Sun, which was the second in the series, and then again in 2010, win the gold medal from Forward again for Scimitar's Heir, which was the third in the series. Now, that's never been done before. The Forward book review people do like to spread the love around, but they do, the contest is a national contest for all small presses and independent presses, and for us to take it 3 years in a row, well, that makes us feel pretty special. So, now we're even more excited because, and I like to think it's due to the success. We recently landed a book contract with Paizo Publishing, that is a role-playing game publisher that puts out a fantastic product called Pathfinder, and they also publish a series of novels, their own novel line called Pathfinder Tales. And they're only in their third year this year of publishing, and I was fortunate enough to get together last year at one of the big conventions, Gen Con, with their publisher, James Sutter, and through some looking at my work and getting him some samples, he was pretty impressed, and we got a novel coming out next year, so we are just pleased as punch.
Well, I should think you would be. Now, it's what I think is probably getting to be a fairly typical way for writers to achieve success these days. You basically did it yourself at first, and then you got noticed.
I could maybe qualify that. I made sure that I was noticed. Getting noticed as a self-published author is very difficult in the United States. Advice to any new writer: I'm not saying anything bad about self-publication. I've done it myself, but if you're going to do it right, and always look at small presses first. There's a lot of small presses out there, very good publishing houses, and it gives you just a little bit more legitimacy, and you won't have to take that first step all by yourself. You'll have some help. You'll have some professional editing going on, and you won't have to get all the hard knocks that we got. So, coming up through the ranks was both a good and painful experience for us. We learned a lot, but we made a lot of mistakes in the process. It's sink or swim, and there's a lot of competition out there, but you can do it. You can do it.
Well, you know, people who don't make any mistakes, generally haven't really tried to do anything.
So. Well, then I must have the corner on the market with trying, because, you know, we did make quite a few mistakes. We had agent problems, and we had publication problems, and we had publisher problems, but you know, we're trying to put most of that behind us, and the thing to remember with these with getting into the business is that it is a business. And you know, you think, well, it's art. I'm creating a work of art here with my novel, and that is true. You are creating art, but as soon as it's published, the art becomes product, and you have to be able to not only create the art, but nowadays anybody but an A-list author working for one of the big publishing houses pretty much has to market that product themselves. And so we were very fortunate in the science fiction fantasy field to have an unbelievable number of conventions that are hosted all around the nation. And this is an opportunity for a writer, and a new writer at that, to market their product directly to the public. And that's what we did with our first three novels, is we took it right to the public. And one of my self-published novels, Weapon of Flesh, won a national award as well. And it won the 2005 USA Book News Best Science Fiction Fantasy Title of the Year. And that in and of itself, for a self-published author to do, that speaks to not only your ability to create good prose and create a good story, but also to package your product well. We went out there and got a professional artist to do the cover. It's still, I think, my best cover. It catches eyes at every convention. People will stop 50 feet away and come over just to look at the artwork. And that's what a cover is for. And not only that, but as a self-published author, I went and went to a professional publishing service, a lady that I met through an educator, and had a professional copy editor go through the manuscript and create and correct all of my punctuation and sentence structure errors and things like that. And honestly, I think that and the cover is what got me that award. So, like I said, you're creating art, but you're also creating a product, and you have to polish it up, and it has to be beautiful. So that's what you have to do.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you, a lot of the books that I get on Kindle or whatever, it's clear that they did not do that. There's an awful lot of prose out there that, well, it seems like a really good story, but I wish they would get the words right.
Yeah, I can understand that. There's no real substitute for polishing your craft and getting the input of a professional editor. And this is another thing I might put in. You don't have to go to one of these editorial services that you'll find online. Talk to your local educators. There are some really, really fine English teachers out there that would love to earn a little bit of money on the side doing some copy editing for you, or just reading your manuscript and giving you some input. But if you're going to get an editor, if you're going to get a professional editor, make sure that they are legitimate. There's a lot of sharks in the water, and new authors are nothing but fresh meat for a lot of them, and they will charge you a ton of money and do nothing for you. So make sure you're getting a legitimate publisher, a legitimate editor, and go from there. But and agents too. I might mention that. Make sure you're going to get an agent that's going to work for you, and never, never, never pay an agent any money up front. Their job is to earn money for you, and so earn money for themselves. You should never pay anybody up front for agent services. There's way too many scams out there.
Well, that sounds like some excellent advice, Chris, and I thank you for that.
Sure.
I'd like to move on to your lifestyle is I can't help but envy you for living on a 45-foot sailboat and sailing around the Caribbean and wherever else. tell us a little bit about that. What's it really like?
Well, okay, first of all, let me tell you how we got into this. It really has nothing to do with my writing, but my wife and I have always loved sailing, and we've lived on more than one sailboat, and we have both worked very good-paying, not high-end careers, but good-paying careers for almost 20 years, and had been saving our pennies and bought the right boat and outfitted it with the ideal to take it sailing while we were still, you know, reasonably young and able to enjoy it. And in May of 2009, in fact, that was the month that I found out that Scimitar Moon won the Forward Award, and we had just started cruising, we quit our jobs and cut the lines loose and decided to do some sailing. And the plan was to just keep sailing until the money's gone, and then we'll just, if we need to, go back and get jobs. And unless I get, you know, that bestsellers list, you know, we'll probably have to go back and get jobs. But the lifestyle is unique. It's not all laying in the sun, drinking rum, and watching the beautiful girls on the beach, although there is a little bit of that now and again.
I imagine so.
you have to watch the weather. You have to keep things running. You have to be self-sufficient. We're power self-sufficient. We have solar and wind power on the boat that pretty much takes care of our electrical power needs. So you have to be able to troubleshoot all the systems. You have to kind of be a diesel mechanic and a fiberglass specialist and a painter and a carpenter and an electrician all wrapped into one. And because if something breaks out in the middle of nowhere, you're pretty much it. But it is a lot of fun. My wife does put a blog up on our sailing adventures, and if you want to have a look at that, just look for Sail Mr. Mac, that's all one word, SailMrMac, at blogspot.com, and that's our blog. And she does a wonderful job of it. We have beautiful pictures up of virtually every place we've been. We've been anywhere from Maine to Trinidad, up and down that line. So we spent a lot of time in the Bahamas, and beautiful, beautiful sailing, and wonderful people, and wonderful islands, and a lot of foreign countries, and new flavors and tastes and foods, and wonderful snorkeling. We love to be in the water, and I'm telling you, I'll keep doing it as long as I can, as long as I can keep going. I need to crowdfund this, I think, would be the way to go.
I think
get
you
on
should.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah. Keep Chris sailing crowdfunding. I don't know what I would. I guess I could. I could give away vacations. I could say if you pledge me $10,000, you can come down and stay on my boat for a week. So
well, I would think so.
Yeah.
Hey,
the crowdfunding thing is an interesting concept. Not to get off subject or anything, but there's a lot of writers and a lot of publishers out there that are crowdfunding sources, crowdfunding projects and publishing projects. And so, if you're famous, you know, and you have that bully pulpit and you have a lot of friends, that's a viable option to get the funding ahead of time. But you have to give something for what you receive. So, but it's an interesting concept.
Yes, it is. Well, I think we're probably just about out of time, Chris, but
sure.
It's been a lot of fun visiting with you. You know, you're one of the two Hersher Project people that I've actually met in person.
Yeah.
So it's nice to hear your voice again.
Yeah.
And can you share with the listeners one more time where they can find you as well as the sailing blog?
Sure.
And also where they can get the new book.
Sure. all of my work is available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and in Kindle and other ebook formats. If you want to see my products and get a free taste, I have chapters of all of my novels posted on my website, and that website is jaxbooks.com, and that's JAXBOOKS.com. And I also run a blog there. I do some writing blogs, some a little bit of philosophical blogging. I also do some book reviews that I throw up there, things like that. But as far as getting the products, I only do signed copies at conventions. But if you are going to be in Atlanta, Labor Day weekend, I'm going to be at DragonCon, and that's a huge convention, and usually about 70,000 people show up in the 4 days of DragonCon, and you can come by and pick up a signed copy of any of my works. We just finished a convention in Indianapolis, Gen Con, which is a gaming convention, and that was very good to us. Always meet a lot of wonderful people, and it's always great to see fans. So drop by the website, Jack's Books, the sailing blog, which is Sail Mr. Mac at blogspot.com. And, you know, feel free to drop an email or a message or comment on any of my posts, and have a good time.
Well, that sounds great, Chris. And thank you very much, and you have a good night.
You too, Chuck, and thanks for having me on. It was very good to talk to you again.
This message brought to you by the BOP, Federal Bureau of Prisons. Think you live in Merca? Capital M? Think you can do what you want? Think you don't have to pay taxes, pay for weapons to kill people, or opposing United States corporations? Think you'd rather have your money pay for schools, roads, poor people, old people? Well, think again. Look around. Get your mind right. Have a good day. We're the BOP.
Good morning, children. This week we are starting my award-winning unit, the unit that won the Teachers Association Geography Award last year at the big Teachers Association meeting. Many other teachers around the country are now copying my work, and that should be illegal, and I will get them. But for now, you are the lucky recipients of having me as your teacher. If you will open your packets on the upper left-hand corner of your desk, this is the first day of our Where the Fuck Is unit. We will ask, where the fuck is Syria? Where the fuck is Yemen? Where the fuck is Pakistan? And on Friday, we will ask ourselves, where the fuck is Bahrain? Next week, we will begin, what the fuck do we care? And next month we will start on a project that will take us to the end of the year. How the fuck we can all just get rich like real Americans and forget all the rest of the world and this geography crap. And I think that's where we can really pull all this together. We'll all start to make sense. Well then, please open your fucking packets and let's begin. Who put the bop in the bop-she-bop-she-bop? Who put the ram in the ram-a-lam-a-ding-dong? Who put the special agent in the news editor's desk, you think? Who put the lie in the New York Times, you say? Who put the Gulf of Tonkin in the whoopee, we're all going to die in Vietnam thing? Who put the Oswald Ray Sirhan in the sophomore history text? PSYOPs, U.S. Naval and Army Intelligence. It's what we do in Baghdad, Bangkok, and Bemidji, too, paid for by you.
We still don't seem to have David Marshak, so I'm going to present some of the ideas that he had told us about in the hopes that he's going to call us soon. David Marshak wrote a book, Kids Need the Same Teacher for More Than 1 Year. And if you think back to what I was saying at the very beginning of the show about training versus education, well, that was kind of setting the tone for what we expected to be this interview. The idea is that there are two different kinds of multi-year classroom experiments that have been going on for some years now. One is to have several different classes, all kids of several different ages, all in one classroom at the same time. That's called a multi-year classroom. The other idea that's been bandied about and tried quite a bit recently is called looping. And in that form, there's one teacher stays with a class rather than staying with a grade. Okay, instead of being a first grade teacher, he'll be a first grade teacher 1 year, a second grade teacher the next year, third grade teacher the following year, and they are proceeding to the same group of kids with the same teacher for 2 or 3 years. The idea here is that there's more continuity. There are a lot of different ideas. Have you heard about this, Mike?
No, I've never heard of it before.
Really?
Sorry. No, I don't know what it is. No, but something you said was kind of interesting. You said the idea of teaching kids to think instead of molding them to be good little workers, that would be good. And I'd like to know, I just think that I think of history, and I think that if a teacher goes into teaching history, I don't think it actually goes with what you were talking about, but if a teacher goes into teaching history and teaches it the way that I think it should be taught without all the lies in there, I mean, they wouldn't last very long. So kids get to what I think is they get a phony history of their country and of the world. But no, I don't know anything really about this looping thing.
Since we don't seem to have David and we might get him another time, let's go on to talk about history. I think that's a good thing, Mike. In my high school, Friends Central School in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, or near Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, there were some very good teachers of history, and they didn't cover things up. They didn't teach just what you might get in your typical public school history book. One thing that was stressed over and over was the concept that all history is a series of revolution and counter-revolution, revolution and counter-revolution. And it's a cycle that goes on and on, back and forth.
That's a good school.
Yeah, it was. They like to teach people to think.
Yeah.
It's still a great school. But this idea of the cycles of history and revolutions, they're not all actual wars. You can have a peaceful revolution, when there's just a complete change. Of course, we humans aren't really very good at peaceful revolutions, and most of them involve people killing each other. But
Do you think we can do that in the U.S., Chuck? A peaceful revolution? We're supposed to have
I'd like
teacher.
But I am not too convinced. It seems that all we get is more of the same.
Yeah, we're supposed to have a peaceful revolution each election cycle, but that's turning out to be quite a joke.
Yeah, it sure is. I think, there used to be more than two political parties that actually had a chance to win. That just hasn't been the case for a long time. And of the two that we have left, there isn't much to pick between them. I mean, supposedly we've got the Liberal Party in office now, right? They don't seem liberal to me. Not that I really believe in the labels anyway, but yeah, what's going on in government just doesn't match what I think of. It's not my American dream, that's for sure.
I think Jill Stein and Ben Mansky and the struggle they're going through, that's about actual, with the Green Party, that is, for president, and that's about actual, that's real American politics there. That's just like it was, that's like it was drawn up on the drawing board, just how it's supposed to be. Maybe it's, I don't know, it's the toughness of it is, it's very tough, and it makes, I don't know, I think it makes it genuine and real, and too bad that it just has to be a nice try. Too bad it can't actually succeed.
Yeah.
Should I go on to number 11?
Sure, why don't you do that? Let's go.
Okay. Occupy Dealey Plaza. That's where it all began. November 22nd, 1963, about 12:30 p.m., 50 years ago on November 22nd, 2013, filled Dealey Plaza with protesters and signs and singing and speaking, and let them bring their dogs and their cops and their robbers and murderers and their sniper rifles and double-secret video cameras and microphones. Occupy Dealey Plaza. We demand a truth commission to replace the Warren Commission and the 9/11 Commission. We want freedom. We want peace. We want real hope and real change. Occupy Dealey Plaza. Let them know we know what they have done. Occupy Dealey Plaza. Let the world know this is America.
When you vote for Al Gore or Barack Obama because they were supposed to be better than Hitler, you get depressed. When you get depressed, you listen to Barry Manilow. When you listen to Barry Manilow, you have dreams about Mandy Johnson and the chicken shit in 1978. When you have dreams about Mandy Johnson and the chicken shit in 1978, you wake up to try to find Mandy Johnson on Facebook. When you try to find Mandy Johnson on Facebook, you drive to Scottsbluff, Nebraska. You find out the Chicken Shed is now the Chicken Shed Restaurant. And Mandy Johnson is the owner, and she's been eating chicken and mashed potatoes 9 times a day since 1979. And you have to crawl out the tiny window of the men's restroom to escape from Scott's Bluff. Don't have to crawl out the tiny window of the men's restroom to escape from Scott's Bluff. Vote for Jill Stein and the Green Party for President of the United States of America.
This program is also brought to you tonight by your local hometown, just like you, down-to-earth, buddy-buddy, military recruiter. Come on, come in and sit down. We know how it is. You need money and something to do with your life and some sort of skill and something to do with your life. And without learning how to kill people, you would not know what to do with your life. Dude, we wouldn't either. And it's fun to shoot a gun and kill people. When you kill people, you protect America. High school football and Coke commercials and the mall and your grandma on her porch and pie from Bakersfield to Bismarck to Birmingham. And hey, would you like to just go get a Coke or something? You like Transformers? We are your local military recruiters, Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, for honor, for America, for church and grandma and Coke and pie and for self-worth and not being bored and a big loser. Hey, let's go kill some people. Hoorah.
And make sure to watch this next Wednesday night on CBS after the news. Are you smarter than a prison guard?
Well, it's been a long week in Mount Liberty, Nebraska, my hometown. There have been more burials at sea. Mr. Grant, shop teacher, buried at sea. Carl Quantrell, postal carrier, buried at sea. Sister Mona Corona, buried at sea. Shirley Francis, lunch lady, buried at sea. And we continue, as we have for the past almost 10 years, to do our part to contribute to homeland security. We have lookouts 24/7, 365 on the water tower, looking for terrorists. We also have deputized citizens going undercover looking for terrorists at the swimming pool, the grocery store, and also at the county fair. And now that Osama bin Laden has been killed and safely buried at sea, their stories can be told, because probably the war on terror will end, just like in the early 90s when the Soviet Union folded and we put all that money from military weapons into health care, schools, and roads in the peace dividend. Now we'll probably bring all the troops home and cut defense spending down to almost zero and close the military bases overseas, because what other reason would they be there for? And then we'll spend the money on fixing sidewalks and tuck-pointing the old schools and letting people get health care when they need it. And so now, finally, for the stories from the files of the patriots who have kept us free over this past decade, and a big thank you and welcome home.
Is this heaven? Well, from up here, it kind of does. Well, maybe seem like it. I'm way up here. Up here. On the water tower. Well, not on the water tower. On that walkway that goes around. We've got one of those silver pointed ones. Not so big. Not like the big round white ones they have in Fremont and Columbus. Ours depicts at various times the town name, current graduating class, current mayor's current girlfriend, current state of the local educational system by a spelling acumen. Well, I've been stationed here by the local city council to look for terrorists. For Jesus Liberty, maybe his gang. He might have a gang. That's some of the reports we've been getting. I'm scanning the perimeter, looking for the Nebraska terrorist, Jesus Liberty, as well as any other terror types. Hey, they gave me this cool pit helmet with netting and a beeper. I get a beeper. I've tried it. It beeps. I got this assistant, Jordan. He's going to be in fifth grade in the fall. He sends me up extra water on this pulley system he fixed up. Anyway, maybe I'm facing the wrong way, but what I see is Mrs. Vandreessen pulling into the Hy-Vee lot. She's been pulling in for most of the morning. There's a special on iceberg lettuce. I see Jared Vandeboom. He's driving around in the black and white cruiser, mostly watching me. There's most of the city council coming out of coffee at family table. They're not really supposed to get together like that. It makes people think that they're planning, making decisions outside of meetings. They're pointing up at me. Hey, guys! There's the spire of St. Lucie's Catholic Church over in Mount Carl. On the other side of the corn and soybeans and the river and the dump and the National Guard Armory. Well, I'll keep my eyes peeled. Don't worry about a thing. Perimeter is secure. I'll let you know if I see anything. Hasta los tacos. Oh, there's Lula Vanderswag. I'd see a lot more if I had some binos. Hey, Jordan!
Hey, come here. Hey, shh, I have to whisper. I am here amid the Market Lambs and the Myers family. Shh. I wish you could see me, but I'm incognito. I have managed to slip inside the infrastructure of the Ace County Fair. The sun is shining bright. It is hot. It is very early, but the little bleachers in the sheep judging area are already packed hip to butt to brisket. Over here, I'm the understudy judge, my public persona. Actually, I'm here under the not quite official auspices of the United States Department of Homeland Security, although I understand that if I am captured, they will deny any knowledge of me whatsoever. I'm used to that. My parents said the same thing. I get to wear this green vest with a big button with a photo of a sheep, and there are about 100 other badges on this vest, all for starting fires. I'm wondering if I might have belonged to an insane Girl Scout at one time. And I've got a straw hat that kind of hangs in my eyes, black rimmed glasses, yellow judging shorts, the real deal. I'll be here all week. My goal is to get over to the Nebraska sweet corn dipped in butter and then chocolate booth and back here without losing my spot. Bah, oops, that just came out. I'm not taking my eye off the target, not for a moment. I have my eyes on the prize. There isn't anything or anybody in this arena that will escape my extreme scrutiny. Go about your day. I got this. I actually think the guy in the brand new coveralls in the third row from the bottom would fry up real well. And his wife has good muscling and a nice rump. They both have good thickness through the leg with natural thickness as well over the top. Definition is apparent with good straightness of lines. Bah, sorry, ma'am, undercover. Hey, while there is a break here, I want to tell you about something. It's here in the sheep judging manual. Something about sheep and human beings and how to tell the difference.
Jesus, Mary and Joseph. God bless America. Hey, oh my God. How you doing? Catch my breath. I'm deployed with the guys on one of the silver metal benches outside the city swimming pool. We're watching. For terrorists. Dude, they can't swim. It's like Negroes and wetbacks. Dead dog giveaway. Also, late in the summer, I suppose the moms have those El Primo tans, well as the lifeguards, their one-piece red suits, those whistles that dangle like necklaces. Anywho, that'd be myself, Don, Milt, Al, Fred. We're the newly formed Municipal Special Forces Team. Total Information Terror Surveillance. We've been duly organized and chartered and deputized, I think, by the city council to guard against terrorists. Beginning this month and running through the school year, that's how I understand it. Don came up with this idea to come here. Fools open up to Labor Day. He says, why do you think they call them wetbacks? The rest of us had to admit it made perfect sense. And, of course, everybody knows Arab types often position towels on their heads. Lots of towels around here today. Al got four in his lap. Won't give them out to anybody without good reason, he says. Hot today. Big crowd, lots to watch, keep track of, monitor, observe. Sometimes we get soaked pretty close to the action. We act like we like it that way. Al's got the beeper in case we need to call for backup towels. His wife's home most of the day. Tomorrow she got shit to do. By now, lifeguards don't wear that white stuff on their noses. Everything out naturel. We got sunglasses from the Ben Franklin store. Orange terror vests and shorts. Special Homeland orange hard hats. That was Al's idea. Come from the state highway maintenance shed. Big patch job they had last summer out by the go-kart track. Gets too hot? Well, Don's going to ask a councilman who's his neighbor who can take him off while the pool has rest break. Get some breeze. Some ladies get up quick when they're napping on their stomachs and they get splashed. Hey, maybe they got that one string knot tied. Milt had to go home early yesterday. Gets to a guy. It's working for everyone. We've each got a terror whistle and string around our neck. Fred blew his loud for about a minute straight just a few minutes ago, and the Champlain walked past on her way to the water fountain. I don't think he even knew he was doing it. Some days, about all a guy can do not to blow this damn thing all day long. Don keeps his in his mouth all the time like a referee. Does not move, scratch, it's nothing. He loves freedom that darn much. So dedicated, inspiration to us all. Oh, well. Nothing happening here at the moment. Oh, boy, look out! Cannonball! God bless the USA. Go about your day. I got this.
Que paso? I'm sitting here in Greg's hometown food store detective, looking for terrorists, securing the homeland on all the front lines. As always, just trying to do my part to ensure the freedom of my fellow Americans. I am looking for Mexicans who might be illegally alive, who do not have the proper stamp on the papers in their pocket, and thus deserve to be separated from their weeping children and sent wherever we want to send them, in a hot, crowded, white INS van. If you can see me from where you are seated, you know that I'm also sitting on the floor in the corner between the white milk and the tortillas at the far end of the Mexican food aisle. It is my charge to find any Islamicists, Hispanicists, or other terror-type individuals. I am also to tackle anyone I suspect of being from Iowa, Greg says. I am undercover as per usual. I am wearing a big white sombrero. My head is drooping to my knees, but I am not sleeping. Sometimes I'm sleeping. Sometimes snoring. I get a beeper. I'm wearing a new white T-shirt with blood red letters. Pinche puta store detective. Pretty cool. Go about your day. I got this. And that's the news from Mount Liberty, where all the soldiers are thugs. All the Democrats are cowards, and all the summer hell bounty hunters are about average.
And that wraps up another episode of the New American Dream Radio Show. We thank you for listening. We hope you'll come back again next week, same time, same place. We'd like to thank our various sponsors, thespiritualun.org, worldnewstrust.com, and June2508.com. And, well, you know, speaking of sponsors, we love to bring this show to you, and it does cost us a little bit to bring it. So we'd sure appreciate it if you'd stop by theshow.newamericandream.info, our show's website, and click on the old donation button, throw us a little something to help us cover the expenses of being here on the Blog Talk Radio. Anyhow, we'd appreciate it if you do that. Thank you, Mike, for continuing with these great scripts. I just love to read this stuff. Thanks, Mike, and good night.
You betcha. Good night, Chuck. Stay warm. And good night, Mrs. Calabash. Good night, Tom Beamer. And good night, Barbara Olson, wherever you are.
Oh.